You're listening to North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Phoebe Judge. Every year, thousands of whales and dolphins wash up on shorelines. Many are already dead, but some are not, and they become stranded or beached. Rescuers must then decide what to do with the animals, some of whom are badly injured. Often, the best option is euthanasia. Craig Harms is a researcher at NC State based in Morehead City. He's also become one of the world's foremost experts in whale euthanasia. He's part of a team that's developed a new, more humane way to end a whale's life. It's a process that began after a tragic beaching of a right whale on Cape Lookout in 2009, where the only access was by Coast Guard helicopter.
The pilot, she asked me, how much time do you need? And I said, I can do quite a bit of what I want to do in half an hour. And then she said, you have 10 minutes. And so we did as much as we could in 10 minutes, got some sedatives on board to just try and make it more comfortable, but obviously couldn't do anything for it. We were just kind of hoping that it would expire on its own. The next morning, it was still alive. It was calmed down enough that we were able to get out there by boat, still a little bit rough, but we still had the tidal issue. We put everything we could into it, got it as sedate and pain relieved as we could, but we knew that after we'd given it everything, it wasn't going to be enough. And we knew we had it in as good a state as we could get it, and we decided that we were going to just have to exsanguinate it, which is cutting a blood vessel and letting it bleed out.
Which must be just an immense amount of blood.
Yes. Yes, it was. And it was hard on everybody.
So what usually happens when a whale beaches itself and is still alive? Mm-hmm. What's the usual course of action?
It varies from region to region. In North Carolina, part of it's the response is imposed by how remote a lot of the beaches are. There really is no such thing as a rapid response, which is actually kind of good because although most whales that hit the beach, they're there because there's something badly wrong with them. Occasionally, one just has bad luck with the tide, just didn't judge things right. And those otherwise healthy ones, their best chance of rescue is self-rescue if they can get off that sandbar on the next high tide. So we give them at least one high tide or two high tides to self-rescue because, frankly, to get the kind of equipment that would be necessary to get them off the beach without damaging them would take too long for their physiological processes to survive.
Why can't you just, you come up upon one of these whales, it's on the beach, it's big, yes, but there are machines and there are people who would like to help. Push this thing back into the water.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's way easier said than done. First of all, a lot of them are there because they are seriously injured or seriously sick, and so if you just get them back in the water, they're still going to die. It's just that they feed the sharks instead of feeding the gulls. People say, why don't you just wrap something around its tail, pull it off? If you do that, you can dislocate the tail. They can't swim. A whale that can't swim, can't feed, can't do anything. The kind of equipment to move a whale safely and effectively is something that is just beyond capacity of having that kind of equipment staged and ready to deploy all up and down both shores of the U.S. for those very few animals that could actually benefit from it.
So we know there are places like Australia, which when they have a whale that is not going to get off the beach and is obviously going to die, they will sometimes explode it.
And I need to correct that. They do use explosives, but they don't explode the whale. They use very carefully shaped charges to drive a pulse, a shockwave down on the brainstem. And so there aren't pieces of whale going all over the place. It's directed charge. It's more of an implosion because it's collapsing the brain case onto the brain. People did try the explosive method where they actually put charges under the whale to try and blow it up. And A, it didn't kill the whale right away, and B, it was really messy, so that is a really bad way to do it. But this technique that they're using in Western Australia is actually pretty impressive. It's outside my skill set. I don't like working around explosives, but the effect that they have, they've got a whale suffering in the beach. They pack the charges over the back of the head. They detonate it, and it just makes a little bit of a depression over the top of the head. And 1 second the whale is suffering, the next second the whale is totally insensible.
So we do not use that technique here.
No.
What was being done before you came along?
A mix of things. One is nothing, and just because there's the task is so big and you're just letting nature take its course, which is a course of action that needs to be on the table, because sometimes that might be the only option, and whales have been stranding for millennia before we came along. But it's really hard to sit there and watch a whale basically suffocate. They're peeling, and usually there are scavengers. Nature's not kind.
What has been the most commonly used drug that has been injected into these whales to euthanize them in the past?
The most commonly used drug, if any drug is used at all, is the standard euthanasia solution that the main ingredient is pentobarbital. It's a very humane way to end an animal's life. The problem is that pentobarbital is very toxic to anything that comes along to consume an animal that's been euthanized by that. And there have been cases of euthanized large animals out west where bald eagles, golden eagles have consumed euthanized livestock and died. There's one case where really strong evidence that a dog that consumed a piece of a residual whale from a euthanized whale went into a rather sustained coma, did come around eventually. But secondary toxicity or relay toxicity is something that if you can't completely safely, appropriately dispose of a euthanized carcass afterwards, then we really can't use that. There have been other people up and down the coast and on the other coast who have had issues, and after our respective, I call them disaster stories because they were just kind of traumatic for everybody involved, we did the best we could. We think it was the best for those individual whales that we could muster at the time, but we knew we needed to do something better.
So what have you come up with?
So the technique is, it's based on using potassium chloride, which is a natural salt. In high doses, it will stop the heart. By itself, it's not humane. So you can't just inject an animal with potassium chloride and it will die, but it's not going to affect the head before it stops the heart, and there's that interval of extreme distress. So it can only be administered to an animal that's insensible. So I'll just go down the drugs. Midazolam, which is also Versed. Is the trade name. I've had that for a couple of procedures. It's great. It calms you down. You can have cogent conversations that you don't remember afterwards. So we start off with that, kind of take the edge off. Then we follow that up with acepromazine, which is a sedative tranquilizer that's used in horses. The main pre-euthanasia drug that we use before the potassium chloride is a drug called xylazine or rompin. And we're working mainly up around the head, which is the safer end of a whale, rather than working at the flukes. There's some great vessels at the flukes, but that's where you can get really badly hurt by their fluking action. About 5 to 10 minutes between each of those injections, it gets deeper and deeper, and it gets to the point where you can stick your hand down by the lips down to the tongue. They don't react. They don't react when you stick your fingers into the blowhole, and it'll fully awake whale. That's one of the things that they absolutely hate. At that point, we go to something that looks pretty dramatic, but at that point, they don't care. So we don't care so much either, but it's the really long, sturdy intracardiac needle. So it's about, 4 feet long and very, very thick. So we mix up potassium chloride that we get from a water softener company, so it's very inexpensive, mix it up to saturation, which is about twice the concentration of the medical-grade potassium chloride. And with one garden sprayer full, you get that long needle. This looks, it looks like a harpoon. Put that in the heart, pump that garden sprayer empty, and a few minutes later, it'll go through some terminal, we call it terminal fluking, also euphemistically call it their last swim, because that's kind of what it looks like. It's their last swim, and they expire, which compared to some of the horror stories that are out there, it was just such a relief to have something that worked and that we didn't have to worry about all the environmental or secondary toxicity issues.
So how widely spread have you shared this new cocktail? Is it being shared around with other countries?
It is. Last fall, I attended a workshop in London. It was part of the International Whaling Commission workshop that gets reported up to the larger group. And it's apparently one of the few areas in the larger International Whaling Commission structure where there's cooperation between whaling countries and anti-whaling countries and kind of in-between countries, and they really like us because we're actually getting something done. And so, yeah, we laid out a report detailing our chemical method and the Australians' physical method. And no, neither one is perfect for all situations. There's room for improvement, but this is being shared widely within the U.S. and internationally as a technique that works.
Craig Harms is a professor of aquatic wildlife and zoological medicine at North Carolina State University. This is North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.